It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Hour number two of the Appleton program. Very happy to have an old friend back on, but we're going to be talking a little business locally about fighting, and that is Rick Marigian, who manages a number of fighters, most notably in this particular case and for this conversation, Jose Ramirez. And if everything goes right, Jose will be joining us tomorrow around this time via the telephone from where he's training. Rick, how you been? I haven't seen you in a while.
I'm sleep deprived, I have anxiety, and I'm stressed out, but that's normal.
I can't imagine why, but yeah, you have a full plate. How has Jose been since this loss to Josh Taylor? Let's start there.
Good, good. He got married, started the next chapter in his life, and then from there he's reevaluated himself, and to be honest, I haven't seen him this motivated since going into the Olympics in 2012. He's got that type of hunger again, and he's letting it be known. As we all know, Jose is a very quiet person, very respectful, but even lately he's let Regis Prograis have it on social media a couple times. So, you know, that tells me that he's ready.
Well, there are those. I mean, even individual writers with ESPN that says, no more Mr. Nice Guy. That fight, obviously, when you're undefeated and you lose all your belts, it's going to change you for sure. But, you know, using that term, no more Mr. Nice Guy, is that what he's taking into the ring now?
I think he's still a nice guy, but I think he's got a different level of ferocity right now. He knows that anything goes in these massive fights, and he knows that being super respectful in the ring and those kind of things like he did with Taylor, they don't happen again. So he wants his belts back, and that's what he's going to do.
You know, getting to that fight with Josh Taylor, I don't want to dwell on it, but from your point of view as a manager, what went wrong that night?
He was a nice guy. Jose was respectful during the two situations where the referee stepped in to break up the two fighters. In which he did not protect himself because the referee made an egregious mistake and backed out too soon, causing Ramirez to get dropped. And the scorecards on the fight were even. Ramirez won half the rounds, so the knockdown became the reason he lost. And I think that anything goes in a fight like that, and I think Ramirez, he knows that now.
Would there ever be a Taylor-Ramirez rematch?
Absolutely possible. Those two fighters will move up in weight at some point.
Good.
In the next year and a half, and you definitely can see that fight happening.
Is Jose actively looking at that, moving up in weight?
Yes,
I think
yes.
He'll be, my opinion, I think he'll be a better fighter if he does, but that's just me.
No, you're right, and you know boxing. You've even put on boxing shows here in the Valley. He's got the frame for it, without question. So moving up to 147 pounds, I absolutely agree with you.
He can carry it. I mean, he's tall. And there it is in a nutshell. All right. He's got this fight coming up in March. Great that it's in Fresno. You're telling me privately that it's harder and harder to do. Can we delve on that a little bit? What are some of the impediments, the things that you find hard about doing a show in Fresno with Jose?
Well, each time a fighter moves up in his career, they fight less. So the demand for those fights from a national standpoint, larger casinos, bigger markets, they become higher. So in these situations, you know, I'll promote the fight in Fresno, meaning I assume the role of a promoter to put it on. So in essence, I'm competing with these other entities to make a deal with Top Rank to place it here and promote it. So it's very challenging as the number of fights in a fighter's career decrease to do so.
Let me play devil's advocate. Wouldn't it be worth more money if Jose indeed were picked up by a big casino for a fight?
Absolutely, which puts the pressure on me to produce enough income and revenue to compete with those offers.
There you go.
Putting Top Rank in a great position at that point.
So you've answered the question. My next question, is he still with Top Rank? Yes, he is. Bob Arum, you're telling me, is still active. It's amazing, 91 years old.
Right, but ironically, he just has one fight left with Top Rank with no extensions after. So a win on March 25th would create LeBron James type free agent in the boxing space. So there's a lot at stake March 25th with leaving just one fight after on his contract with Top Rank.
This is the one fight, or there's one fight after?
One fight after, which means that, you know, wow, you could see Top Rank giving him a massive fight like Teofimo Lopez or something to that effect. So you got to get past March 25th, though, to set up that last fight, of which they, you know, could entice him to stay. And, you know, that would happen with giving him a big fight to do so. But he'll be in the driver's seat at that point.
You know, I Bob Arum may be old now, 91. He may be a little bit forgetful. Okay. He's still cagey and he's not stupid. He knows that Jose is still an extremely bankable, viable commodity. I would assume he would like to hold on to him. What's your vibe?
I agree. Look, he's sharp still. He still cusses me out at a moment's notice. And he absolutely will look at the situation that way. So the other thing is, you know, I feel Ramirez is still a large draw in the sport of boxing. You can go across the board, and it's very hard to find a place where any boxer of any caliber can draw 15,000 people, let alone have Fortune 100 and 500 sponsors wrapped around them. So that's going to play into it as well, because it looks great on TV, and it just gives a tremendous energetic feeling when watching.
It does take two to tango. Is there a desire to remain with Arum, or – you know, I mean, is it time to maybe throw yourself out there and play the field?
So, look, Jose and myself, we both appreciate Top Rank, and we think they are the, you know, leading promoter.
I can't think of anybody
in
bigger.
In the United States, yeah, I deal with all the other ones. I deal with Matchroom, PBC, probably one of the only guys that deals with everybody. So that's first and foremost. But, you know, this is the prime part of Ramirez's career. So he's going to make a decision that, you know, financially also takes care of the next chapter of his
sure,
career.
Sure.
And so we don't know what that entails quite yet. You've seen the sport's most elite, the Top Rank has built, from Oscar De La Hoya to Miguel Cotto to Floyd Mayweather. And there's an exit point at some time with all of them. But he'll be open-minded, of course, in the process.
How old is Jose now?
30 years old.
Yeah.
This place has watched him grow from age 16, where I first met him at the Grizzly Baseball Stadium, fighting on a USA boxing card on the field before an MMA fight that I put on. That was when I met him.
Did you have a vibe that night when you met him? This could be a big one.
Absolutely not. In fact, a buddy of ours asked me to use the field, because I already paid for it for the MMA fight, if they can just use it. And I said, no problem. Then when the amateur boxing fights had taken place, he's like, make sure you watch that kid. He's special. And I said, look, I have every rapper calling me, musician, MMA fighter. The last thing I need is an amateur boxer to deal with. You know, boxing's dead. I watched him. He won his fight, knocked his guy out. That was it. I didn't even think twice about it. Went and told him hi afterwards. Good job. And 1 o'clock in the morning, got a text message from that friend saying Google his name, and I did, and the only thing that came up was random statistical fight data, Ray. Vacaville, California, win. Texas, win. And then I called Colorado Springs, the Olympic training facility, in the morning, because I said to myself, how can a 16-year-old have fought 160 times at this point? What is he fighting since he was 1 year old? And then they explained that, you know, he fights multiple times a week, he's that good. And then the last step to that was I had an intern from Fresno State at the time do a spreadsheet for me. And I said, take the most famous Olympic boxers, put them on a spreadsheet, their records, put Jose in the middle and pop it off in yellow. And when I got that sheet, I sat back in my chair, and his record was as good or better than De La Hoya, Vargas, Sugar Ray Leonard, Fernando Vargas, everybody. And then that's when the interest was peaked.
That's pretty sharp on your end. That's a good one. That's great. All right. So the fight that's coming up on March the 25th, who's he fighting?
He will fight former world champion Richard Comey in the main event. And the fight card overall, without question, is the best one we've ever had here in the Valley. It's without question the best. You've got the first time you're going to see a women's world championship fight, which has caught fire in the sport lately. And the women are starting to make money like the men were. And I've been saying that for years in boxing to the promoters, that when I would do the MMA fights here, the girl fights are the ones that generated the most attention and the crowd went crazy for. So we have the highest level women's fight that we've ever had here that will take place. We've got a litany of Olympians fighting on this card, and just a fight card that people will appreciate and love.
What weight division for the women?
I believe it's 120 that she's fighting at.
And this is a title fight.
World Championship WBC.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm actually going to bring in the girl from Los Angeles that holds the other three belts and put her ringside so we can have some fun and energy with that, because that's who she'd fight if she wins.
Oh, you cagey little promoting devil. Man after my own heart. Rick Morrigan is here. He manages Jose Ramirez. We'll take a quick break. But do you have questions about Jose? Do you have questions about the fight that's coming up? Do you have questions about the... you know, not that we want to dwell on it, the Ramirez-Taylor fight where Jose lost and lost the belts. You know, new attitude, according to Rick, in the ring. He's not going to be the nice guy that he used to be. 490, he being Jose, 800-776-5858, 490-5858. It's the Ray Appleton program on KMJ. Back with Rick Morrigan, you, me, and that's it. Stay there.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
In the KMJ studio, Rick Morrigan, who manages Jose Ramirez, one-time champion. It's going to change, I'm sure. And the next fight, first fight since the loss of Josh Taylor, is March the 25th at the Save Mart Center. I assume tickets are doing very well. He can pack them in. It's amazing. I've been to all the fights locally, and it's astounding to see that many people turning out for boxing in Fresno, but we've always been a big boxing community.
Yeah, look, one of the largest attended cities in boxing. I think it's like 155,000 people that we've drawn, you know, over the years to watch him fight.
That's amazing by any standard. Any standard. Would you be willing to say this is maybe going to be one of the last times we're going to see him fight locally?
Very
going back to what we were talking about earlier?
Yes, it's very possible. You know, having one fight left with Top Rank, you know, after this one, we don't know where he ends up potentially. Unless I'd have to negotiate another co-promotional deal into his contract wherever he goes to continue to try to bring a fight home so that I can promote it. But those efforts will be made, but there's still a very good chance that you might not see him again in this market.
Let's talk about the guy that he's fighting, this guy Comey, former champ. What else do we need to know?
This is a tough guy that comes forward. This is not going to be a fight where what we're used to seeing in guys where they run around the ring when they fight Jose because of his aggressive nature and coming forward style. This guy comes forward as well. You're going to see him stand in front of Jose in exchange. So that's what makes the way for an intense fight.
For a first fight after Taylor, this sounds like nobody's dodging anybody.
He had one fight before, Jose
Pedraza. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think you were there.
Yeah, I was.
But
I forgot.
It seems like that. Look, I sometimes stop and think, hey, have you fought again? But the wedding caused the inactivity, so... in a lot of people's minds, they look at it the same way and forget.
What's Comey's record off the top? Can you recall?
I can't. I want to say he's like 30-3 or 32-1. He lost to Teofimo Lopez, and he had a draw with Jose's last opponent, Jose Pedraza. So definitely a high-end fighter and former world champion, and this guy's hungry. I mean, this is his chance on ESPN in prime time to rebuild his career and find a payday again.
Now, you mentioned earlier, and it's been my wish since I've seen Jose, that he would come up and wait a little bit. The time to come up and wait, is that going to be after this one last fight for top rank and then maybe make decisions then? When does a manager and a boxer make that decision to say, we're going up?
Jose wants to get a belt again or two and then go up. So that would happen in the next year. Possibly this year, at the end of the year, that's what he wants to do. He wants to grab his belt or belts again, and then he'd move up.
So you're feeling this year, 2023, he'll be belted again. He'll have another belt.
I do. I think late this year, we could see Jose strapped up in the ring again and saying farewell to the 140.
Whether that's with Taylor or whoever's got him. Taylor still has the belts, right?
Taylor has one. Regis Prograis has one of the belts. They're spread out right now, so... Josh Taylor didn't stay active, you know, after he had won that fight with Jose. In fact, he just got injured again a few weeks ago and had another fight postponed. So he had to give those belts up.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yes.
Okay. So now we're not a matter of fighting one guy; it's fighting a whole bunch of guys to accumulate again, like he did before.
Yeah, or one or two,
if they've got them.
Yeah, exactly.
In more than
exactly,
one. All right. Okay. The tickets for the fights are on sale now. They begin, as I heard we told one listener who called in, at $29. That's cheap for a show of this caliber. That's cheap.
These shows are very balanced, and there's tickets that are $2,500 each, but we have a lot of ticketing at $29. We spread a lot of ticketing out to the community. I gave the Make-A-Wish Foundation a block of tickets, the Boys and Girls Clubs, the City of Fresno Police Officers and Fire Department. You know, part of being in this community is taking care of the community. So we do give a lot of tickets to groups and people and kids that so they can come that, you know, may not be able to purchase them, or as a sign of respect to the people in our community that take care of it.
That's one side of you and Jose that I'm glad hasn't changed, because you've both, and especially Jose, has been very giving about giving back to the community. And a lot of, you know, boxers tend to go down the road where they've become a little bit arrogant, you know, and they get their head up in the clouds a little bit, as if you don't know that. Yeah. I have yet to see that happen with your guy.
No, he's a very humble, caring person who you know, cares about the people that care about him. And you're right. Like, I don't see it in boxing anywhere. Every show that we've had, all 13, we take money per ticket and we donate it from everything from Valley Children's to cancer patients to kids. We've done a number of auctions for foundations out here. It's been a priority. Not a single fight we've ever done hasn't had some money in it, in large amounts to that extent, going somewhere and then also bringing in people that couldn't afford to buy tickets. That's important when you live here.
Very quickly, because we're down to a couple of minutes, you have more than one fighter. You have more than Jose. How many do you have now?
I have 18 fighters, probably the largest stable in the sport of boxing, and I've got some good ones.
Who are your up-and-comers?
So you'll see a couple of them. These guys are going to be world champions. One is an Olympian, Lindolfo Delgado. He'll fight in Fresno. I've got Joshua Franco. He's a current world champion that just fought in Japan on New Year's Eve. I've got Ruben Villa out of Salinas that just fought in a world title fight and will be fighting again. I could go on, but I don't have enough time to name the rest. But they're all high-end guys, high-end prospects, established guys. I've got Joseph Diaz Jr., Jose Ramirez's Olympic teammate, who was a world champion. Jose Zepeda, that Jose fought before. He just fought for the WBC world title in L.A. in November. A lot of guys.
I was just going to say, Jose Zepeda, that was a one-time opponent of, yeah.
It was.
Jose Ramirez. Okay. All right. But how many of them are local? Because you dwell with a lot of local fighters.
Local.
Not dwell.
So local in the boxing world would be Los Angeles, something like that. Local to us, probably Salinas would be the closest. But I've got a lot of guys that train in L.A., but they're spread out all over the world, to be honest. Texas, Mexico, you name it, New York.
All right. Last question. You guys, obviously, you and Jose have a plan. You're going to get through Comey. And then who are some of the other fighters maybe that you can throw out in the air that might be on the dance card and on the way to grabbing a belt?
Teofimo Lopez.
That is going to be a great fight.
It'd be a massive fight on ESPN and could probably set a ratings number. Jose doesn't like this guy either, which also adds to the buildup of the fight. He genuinely doesn't like him.
Why?
The guy just runs his mouth. He's been disrespectful to Ramirez, and this new Ramirez that we're seeing now he's let the guy know. And so that would be a big fight and one that we would want. Also, 29-0 Arnold Barbosa Jr. that I manage, his name will be tossed in the hat. He fights February 3rd on ESPN against Jose Pedraza, who Ramirez just fought. So those are a couple, but Jose may turn and say, go after Regis Prograis again. So there's the options are going to be good and big for him.
How much input does he have in choosing his opponents?
Everything. But he's never turned down a fight, and he's often chased the biggest fights out there. He chased Josh Taylor. He went after that.
No, that's true. I mean, he talked about Taylor on this program for a long, long time.
Yeah, he chases the big fights. He would have fought Regis Prograis, who has the belt now. But Regis wouldn't fight him with a 60-40 split in Regis's favor, which now that poor guy won't make one-fourth of what he would have made fighting Ramirez. When you hold the belt, there's a 70-30 split unless the fighters agree to adjust the split. And usually it's adjusted for financial purposes. A fighter like Ramirez brings ESPN, brings exposure, brings revenue. So in those cases, you often see a 50-50 or 60-40. This guy didn't want to do that at 60-40, and that's why that fight did not take place recently. Now that guy's going to fight me or you, Ray, because there's no one else for him to fight, and he'll literally make a fifth of what he would have made, which to me I don't understand. If I was managing that guy, I would have flew to Fresno and signed a contract as fast as I could have.
Rick, thank you for coming in.
No problem.
And we'll see you on the 25th.
Absolutely. Appreciate the time.
It's going to be wonderful. Hopefully Jose will join us tomorrow at noon. We'll get that all put together. And it'll be via the telephone.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now. KMJNow.com.
If you have not yet been to a local Jose Ramirez fight at the Save Mart Center, you don't know what you're missing. This, like, as Rick was leaving the building, he says, it's not a boxing match. It's an event. I mean, this is a giant dog and pony show of the most positive. When you say dog and pony show, it sounds kind of negative, and that's not my point. It's just a great event. A great event. He puts together a great card. Rick really knows what he's doing. I was telling Michael during the commercial break, I remember when he was, scratching the ground trying to do rap concerts, promote things like that. And he's made an amazing career out of himself. And when I say out of himself, out of his own acumen for business, he's done so well. And now he's got 18 fighters. Whoa. That's huge. That's got to be one of the biggest stables in the country. We were talking off air about there have been a couple of times when Jose has fought a stablemate, somebody else that Rick manages. I mean, it's got to be like juggling chainsaws. That would be so hard to pull off. But as Rick says, that he's done it ethically. He's done it the right way. He's been truthful. He's been honest. And that's the only way you can be if you wind up with that big of a stable and all of a sudden you got two fighters that are fighting each other. Anyway, much luck to Jose. We'll talk to him tomorrow at noon via the telephone. That looks like it's going to happen. So we'll get it from his mouth if he's no more Mr. Nice Guy, as the press is saying. Earlier today, and I hope you are here, if you weren't, I did put it up on my Facebook page, an amazing revelation from the Biden Energy Department that losing the benefits of the Keystone Pipeline was a huge mistake. This quietly released Energy Department report admits a mistake in canceling the Keystone XL Pipeline. And this report goes through all of what would have been the measured economic benefits had Biden not done that within hours of assuming the presidency. But we all know that he did, and that's that. So there's one from the Biden administration, the biggest one that brought about all of this inflation, everything that, according to Dr. Penbarra, you know, a huge mistake in this quietly released report. Now, the word they use is incontrovertible. Who's they? The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. It's official. Trump's tax cuts paid for themselves. President Biden and the Congressional Democrats want to let expire the major planks of the Tax and Jobs Act of 2017. How many times have you heard Bernie Sanders from Vermont, Elizabeth Warren, President Biden berate the Trump tax cuts as giveaways to the rich? And now, again, for the 90th time today, the Congressional Democrats and Joe Biden want to let expire the major planks of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 from, you know, President Trump. The signature domestic achievement, particularly the incentives for the American business to invest more here at home. We now have, according to the CBO, their word, incontrovertible evidence that after 5 years since they took effect, the Trump tax rate cuts of 2017 raised revenues, big revenues, over this time period. For full disclosure, there are a number of individuals who are involved in this evaluation, Art Laffer, Larry Kudlow, a number of economists from all over the political spectrum. The latest CBO report, Congressional Budget Office, released earlier this month, calculated that the federal government collected $4.9 trillion of federal revenue last year. That's up. That, you ready for this? That's up $1.5 trillion since 2017, the year before the tax cuts became law. In other words, revenues were up 40% in 5 years. The evidence through the first 3 years of the tax cuts finds that the share of taxes paid by the wealthiest, 1%, rose as well, too. So much for this being a tax giveaway for the rich. Did you hear me? Revenues were up 40% in 5 years. The evidence, according to the CBO, through the first 3 years of the tax cuts, finds the share of taxes paid by the wealthiest 1% rose. And this whole thing about it being a giveaway to the wealthy is complete BS. Now, when you compare the numbers with these estimates of what the Trump tax cuts were expected to cost, instead of an expected $1 trillion revenue loss, the tax receipts over this period were almost precisely what they would have been if we didn't cut taxes at all. And remember, that estimate in 2017 never anticipated the two-year hit to the economy from COVID and the lockdowns, which depleted the Treasury. In other words, there was a giant, here we go, it was the Laffer curve. It was a giant Laffer curve effect from the Trump tax cut. We got higher growth and higher tax payments with lower tax rates. Now, that shouldn't be a surprise. No. Somebody else did this once, a Democrat. His name was John Kennedy. He cut tax rates in the 60s. Same thing happened. Ronald Reagan cut tax rates in the 80s. Same thing happened. Lower rates, more revenues. None of this seems to matter to the White House. None of this never, ever, you know, matters to the Congressional Democrats of present day. They want to monumentally, and this is just crazy, repeal a tax cut that worked, according to the CBO. This is like firing the coach who wins every game. Yeah. One of the most important and successful features of the Trump's tax plan, and I remember talking about this so much, was reducing the tax rate on the American businesses from 35%, which at the time was the highest in the world. He reduced it to 25% while closing all of the special interest loopholes. This brought businesses and jobs back to the United States from foreign shores and helped fuel the Trump economic boom. It's a fact. An obvious question is, why are we running a $1.4 trillion deficit if we've had an all-time high in tax payments. Because under the Biden federal spending plans, that spending has exploded to more than $6 trillion. Washington doesn't have a revenue problem. It has a runaway spending problem. It's almost as if Congress is pleading for help. Stop us before we spend again. That's what this looks like to me. $1.5 trillion was the growth in that period, thanks to the Tax and Jobs Act of 2017. And again, one of the most, the biggest key components to this, and God forbid if the Biden administration reverses this, this was one of the most important and successful features of this Trump tax plan, I want to repeat it, was reducing the tax rate on you people who own American businesses. It was at 35%, which at the time was the highest in the world. He dropped it to 25%, and he closed all the special interest loopholes. What did this do? A lot of businesses go overseas because it's cheaper. This brought hundreds of these businesses, thousands, back to these shores, back to the United States. This helped fuel the Trump economic boom. It worked. It worked. It worked when John Kennedy did it in the 60s. It worked when Ronald Reagan, there you go, did it in the 1980s. It worked when Trump did it in 2016, and it became law, and it had active moving parts in 2018. The CBO is a nonpartisan organization, Congressional Budget Office. So two things there on the same day. Keystone Pipeline, the Trump tax cut. By the admission of different factions of the Biden administration, both have worked. Well, excuse me. One would have worked had it not been canceled. The other one is working, was working for the American government and the American people with mutual benefit. More revenues into the Treasury Department, more, you know, brass in pocket for the American middle class, lower class, upper class. But that'll change if Biden and the congressional Democrats get rid of these last few remaining planks of the Trump tax cut. During these times of inflation and recession. Two amazing stories there. So we've been talking about Donald Trump. What about his popularity? What if the race were tomorrow against Joe Biden and it were Donald Trump and Biden all over again? Let's talk about that when we come back on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ, the Ray Appleton program. It's been asked, when will we give tickets away for the fight that Rick Marigian and I were just talking about? We'll start giving them away in February, okay? Next month, which is not all that far away. And the fight, of course, is not until March the 25th.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show.
Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Send me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Right now,
the Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, KMJNow.com.
There's a story out today, and I don't know how much truth there is to it about truth. Donald Trump dumping truth so he can return to Twitter. Now, the way this is couched in the New York Post, you know, Trump preparing to ditch Truth Social so he can return to Twitter. You know, they make it sound like he's planning on giving up on the whole company. And I don't believe that to be true at all. So I think that's their way of saying he may also be venting a lot on Twitter as he used to, along with his own site, Truth, that Devin, you know, is in charge of. So I don't know how much any of that story is true. I don't know. Thank you for asking me. And I haven't called up, you know, Devin and asked him, but I'm planning on it later. That's for sure. Now, Donald Trump has had a great day in terms of the I told you so on the Keystone Pipeline, and also the fact that the CBO has now confirmed with incontrovertible truth their word that his tax cut of 2017, the Jobs and Tax Act, worked. What does this mean to him in a presidential race? Well, the former president has opened up a clear lead over Joe Biden in a new Harvard, yes, Harvard, Harris poll for 2024. Donald Trump leads Biden 46-41 with 13% unsure. Trump also leads even more over Vice President Kamala Harris. Donald Trump at 48, Harris at 40. So again, let me run through all of this. Even we'll throw in a DeSantis for the heck of it. Donald Trump 46%, Biden 41%. Harris, if she were to become the president, Donald Trump 48%. Harris 40%, he would be leading her by 8 points. DeSantis leads Joe Biden by 3, 42-39. DeSantis leads Harris by 3, 43-40. It's worth noting that, and I have to say this, that Donald Trump is outperforming Governor DeSantis in both hypothetical contests in this poll against either Biden or Harris. While DeSantis still also leads both, he leads by less in each instance, as obviously I just demonstrated. Again, you know, Biden DeSantis leads by just 3%, 42% to Biden's 39%, 18% undecided. Big number there in the undecided category. And again, with Harris, DeSantis only leads by 3 points, same thing, 43-40, with 17% undecided. In the GOP primary, Trump has a 20-point lead over DeSantis as well. What a surprise. 20-point lead over DeSantis, as well as 48% to DeSantis, 28%. No other candidate gets double digits in this survey, with former President Mike Pence coming in at 7%, Marco Rubio and Nikki Haley at 3%, Senator Ted Cruz, Tim Scott, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at 1%, while 2% said somebody else and 6% are unsure. Now, Nikki Haley at 3%. Okay. She indicated last week that she clearly could be running for president. Her name recognition is certainly better than that of DeSantis. It's more universal. She'll do a lot better with females. I think if she made an official proclamation that she was running for president, this would be spooky for both DeSantis and Trump. But in a head-to-head matchup with DeSantis, Trump still leads by double digits, 55% to 45%. In a head-to-head matchup between Trump and Scott, the senator from South Carolina, Trump leads by 50 points with a 75% to 25% advantage. So the survey from Harvard University Center for American Political Studies, I think it's called, is CAPS, right? The CAPS? The Harris poll and Harris X, this was all taken in a couple of days recently, January 18th and 19th, and they polled thousands of registered voters. This poll is certainly, come on, welcome news for Donald Trump. And it comes after a month plus of him releasing videos of his policy platform and previewing his vision for how he would handle a number of issues should he return to the White House. And it also comes just before his first major early state campaign event next week in South Carolina, where he will appear with Lindsey Graham and the governor, Harry McMaster. Now, interestingly, the number one most supported issue in this survey, this is going to surprise you, is protecting Social Security. That's always been a biggie, but I would have thought it may have been something else. Trump, in an interview with Breitbart at the Doral Golf Course in Miami, pledged to always protect Social Security. Excuse me. And he reiterated that, you know, the promise in the policy video released last week, he talked about Social Security there too. The position from Trump is something that separates him from many establishment Republicans, including the former House Speaker Paul Ryan, among others. Ryan has always championed throughout his entire adult life efforts to cut Social Security. Now, when asked questions on what things Congress should pass this year, 85% of survey respondents said they wanted a measure to protect Social Security, at least for the next two decades, and they want to see something like that passed at Congress. Very quickly, because we have to break, only 15% said they did not want such a measure. That is far higher than the support, for instance, for a measure repealing the hiring of 87,000 IRS agents, which still has a giant majority of support. That got 59% of respondents back, with 41% opposed. Hour number three of the Ray Appleton program, right after we play this fine music, take a commercial break, and then I take a breath. I warm up my coffee, and then we come back and we do more on News Talk 580-1059-KMJ.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.